My name's Dave. I'm an addict.
Might as well get into this, eh?
Sometimes when I get asked to do this, I think about a couple of things. One, I think about anytime I listen to a speaker, and I think about what I like to hear. And, there's things about addiction that I needed to learn, needed to know, to understand, to accept. And there's things I really needed to know about recovery. And every once in a while, I've listened to people share, and man, they can really tell you a little bit about addiction, and they can, you know, help you understand and see, you know, what that's all about. But when it comes to recovery, I don't want to tell you a big, horrible story, and I don't really, you know, want to do that, but I will tell you some stuff that helps it make sense. And but what I do like talking about is recovery. And after you've been clean a little while, it's a responsibility to keep it going. And I remember when I was new, I'd sit and listen, and I'd hear somebody, and I would feel, and I would believe that I could stay clean. And when I was brand new clean, I went for a little road trip down to California because I wanted to meet some of the people. Their stories were in that book. And there's this story in the book called I Found the Only NA Meeting in the World, and there's this guy. And I thought, I got to meet that guy. And if I could meet that guy, then maybe this might be real, you know, because I was hoping it wasn't like a comic book or something, right, or just a bunch of stories somebody, you know, put together. And I went to this meeting in Venice Beach, California, called Saturday Night Live, and we walked in, and there was, it was about, oh, maybe about twice the size of this, and there was a couple guys there, and we introduce ourselves. We're from Canada. That's like being from fucking Mars, you know, like, because they all have some pretty weird ideas about Canada, you know. One is they think we talk real fast because they talk real slow. And another thing I'm going to try to do, I'll get that out of the way, I'm going to try not to swear, because I swear a lot. I swear a lot. And sometimes I swear so much I don't even know what I'm talking about, but I swear a lot. And I think every once in a while there might be some people listening to me share rather than swear, and they might not get something out of what I'm saying. So I'm going to try to tone it down just a bit. I'm not perfect, but I'll do the best I can. And so we go down there, and Buddy says to me, I'm 6 months clean, and up here at 6 months clean, you're an old-timer. You know, like, you got some time. There's a few people around, but 6 months was a big deal, man. 30 days is a big deal. 6 months is huge. I mean, swear to God, in the old days around here, if you took 30 days, your family would come for the key fob. Because they'd be so blown away, like, wow, eh? So 6 months was a big deal, and me and Lou drove down to California, went to Saturday Night Live, and go figure, Bob B. walks in the room. It's like the Pope arrived. He had about 23, 24 years clean at the time, and they asked me if I'd chair the meeting. And, I was used to the meetings we had, about six people sitting around in a circle. And, some meetings you could chair twice. You'd sound pretty good second time out, you know. Like, all the things you wish you would have said, you get to say on that second time out of the gate. And so every once in a while, I just say whatever. It was intimate, right? And so we go down to this meeting, and if you ever get a chance, Saturday Night Live is still in Venice Beach, still in the same place. And so he asked me to chair the meeting. I'm like, I know how to chair a meeting. No prob. I didn't notice the stage and the mic and all that. And there was only about 10 people there, so I thought this would be easy. And about 20 minutes later, there's 450 people there. And I'm up there with my 6 months clean. And I got this down, you know. And it was like a moment of clarity for me that even as big as it was, people were talking recovery, sharing, reaching out, helping each other, all the mechanism, the motion in recovery that gets going. People were hugging and talking and laughing. And there was like black people, white people, there's a little bit of everything. And a guy got up on stage, he was took an 8-year cake that night, and he was sharing about how that, you know, if he got a buzz at a bang in his head on the wall, he'd have been standing there with a big flat spot. And I could relate when a guy talked like that. I'm like, yeah, partially because I thought, hey, I didn't bang my head on the wall. It seemed like an option. And the other part was, you know, I liked the way he was talking. He was like just dead serious about being clean, talking about recovery, putting some energy into it, not just, you know, like, I was really scared that it would be, I'm not loaded and that's it. You know, like Barb was saying, that's why I like the theme of this thing, you know, living it and loving it. Because I was scared that would be it, you know. What are you doing 2-3 years later? Hanging on, man. Hanging on. See people you know in the program on the street? Hanging on. That'd be it, eh? You know, it just, I don't know, it was, I wanted to see something different. We went to a dance in Hollywood. Like, we had our dances, some of these guys will remember, at the Orange Hall in Vancouver. It was kind of a dangerous place to have a dance because there was poles in the middle of the room. And I was stoned at that first dance. I asked Lou, okay, if I get stoned, can I still come? And she's like, okay, you can go. So I got stoned and went to the NA dance. I think it would have been a little better if I wasn't, but I went anyway. And, you know, what it was that attraction, that thing about, you know, people practice some recovery. It got my attention. So, you know, I'm used to these dances. Anybody getting clean now, spoiled. You're just spoiled, you know, because the meetings are big and there's lots of women and there's big dances. And so I go to this dance and there's about 45 guys and 6 women. And there's a couple we're not sure about, but we're all there. I mean, even the gay women were kind of feeling bummed about it, you know, because there wasn't enough to go around. And you know what? It's kind of weird. You'd think that's really not what I was looking for, because I was thinking, you know, it'd be like the bars and the clubs and all that, and it wasn't all that, but it was fun. And it got my attention, and I think mainly it was about people just caring. And so we're down 6 months clean, going to this dance in Hollywood after I meet Bob. There's Bob, shake my hand, good to see you. He takes us home. Hey, come stay at my house. And we go to this little meeting in Culver City, you know, it's his home group, and he brings his sponsee. I mean, it impressed me, you know. And he bought me my first basic text. You know, the basic text came out in 1983, and he, you know, handed us one of those books and took us to the World Service Office. And, you know, they were real proud of what was going on. They were where we are now about size of the fellowship. And they were proud of the World Service, and they're proud of that book, and they put a ton of work into it. And, you know, Bob gave me that book and, you know, took me to some meetings and took me home and, you know, like, what NA was about. And we went to a dance in Hollywood. There's probably about, I don't know, maybe 1,000 people there. I thought they were all black, too. Like, Culver City's all black people. I went walking around. He's telling me, you can't do that, man. You can't, people will kill you here. You know, you're not invincible anymore. And I had this moment of clarity because I really thought I was. And they had that. They had that energy. They had that going on. And the program was growing. It was just, you know, they had a world directory. It was about that thick, like literally thousands of meetings. And our meetings were in there. I still have that directory. I went down in 1983 and bought it. And, you know, because I thought, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go all the way with it. And, you know, so when I came back home, I had a new appreciation for the meetings I was going to, and I had a new appreciation for the people around me and, you know, what they had done to build this, to make this and keep the door open and keep recovery going. And, you know, we were still having our Academy Award presentations for key fobs. And if somebody took a cake, oh, my God. I mean, I think they dug dead people up for those ones, you know, because nobody could believe that an addict could stay clean, you know. Yeah, like God inspiring. So, and coming from where I come from, I just tell you there's a couple of things I believe about addiction. Is one, I had this thing about that was me as part of my addiction. I always wanted to be someone else, somewhere else, doing something else. And I just never fit where I was standing. And, you know, clean or loaded, it just didn't work for me. And by the time I come to this program, I honestly believe there wasn't a human being on this planet gave a shit if I took another breath. That's how far I went. And, you know, being in an NA meeting, and I remember the first time somebody, you know, I was sitting in a meeting and somebody said, hey, there's this new guy, he's a bit of a meathead, whatever, and I got a 30-day key fob for him. And this woman stands up, gives me a hug, and gives me a 30-day chip. I didn't even know. you know, but it was a big deal. And it was like human contact. Somebody cared, you know, and it was N.A. It wasn't her and it wasn't me. It was this. It's what we do. And I still think it's that important for anybody coming around to, you know, stick around enough days in a row that you start feeling human again. And there's two sides to that. It works two ways. Here's the other side of it. Is anybody that's been clean a little while, what you got to do is watch out you don't separate yourself with your clean time. You know, you get 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, you got to day clean just like everybody else. And it's one of the things I've practiced for a long time. I've kept making friends. I've kept bringing people into my life because I didn't want to end up alone, you know. And I keep doing this. I go to meetings. You know, I still sponsor. I still participate in this program. And, you know, I still got a home group. And, I show up. I just did a road trip down to California. And they have this event, and I think it's almost time we did one up here. It's called Days of the Dinosaurs. And what they do is they call up all the old folks in NA and sort of dust them off and get them to come show up at a speaker thing. And in the beginning, because there's a whole bunch of them, they just weren't around like they used to be. And, you know, what they thought is then all these new people would know who they are. And then when they went to a meeting, they would ask them to share, and they would feel a part of, because some of them were drifting away. And so they invited us down 10 years ago, because at 10 years clean, you're kind of a dinosaur up here. And we went down and spoke, and, you know, they get, I don't know, a couple dozen speakers, and it goes on all day long, and there's just huge rooms full of people, and literally hundreds and hundreds of newcomers. And, you know, it's another one of those things that's been pretty inspiring. And sure, I go down 10 years later, and there's Bob at the meeting again. And now it's 10 more years later, it's 20 years later, and I go down on this little road trip recently, and this Bob sponsors the oldest living NA member right now, and he took a 42-year cake at that meeting. 42 years in NA, and Bob was there, and all the old dogs were there, and you know they sit up front and hench, nod and smile and wave, and you know, and you know it ain't like the Pope arrived. You know it's inspiring in the sense that they're still like buying new guys books and talking recovery, and they're there all day. They're not just popping in like visiting dignitaries. They're there. And that inspires me because they're, you know, up in the 40 plus years clean now. And we were kind of the junior speakers down there at 20 years. You know, I'm the new guy. And, I listen to them speak and I get inspired and I want to talk about recovery. And I want to tell people that, you know what, some of the best things I like saying is that I don't suffer, I don't live in misery, I'm not struggling, I'm not having a hard time to stay clean. This is the easy way. If you're looking for it, you just found it. And that suits me fine. I've always believed I wanted to enjoy this, you know, to... Like, how do you work the steps? You know, like, every once in a while, I hear people get up and they talk about the steps and they'll talk about the book and they'll read the book and they'll do that. And that's all cool. That's part of it. But how do you get those principles going? And how do you change your life? And when I talk to a new guy, I tell him big stuff like this. Be nice. Because if you say spiritual principles to a new guy, they're like, get fucked. Spiritual principle. I wouldn't know a spiritual principle from a Goodyear tire, you know, like... But when somebody said to me, if you want to make it around this program, because this is a fellowship, this will be like your family, you got to get along. And it was a big thing, and I was being told, if you can get along, you'll be able to stick around here, and you'll be able to get well, and you'll be able to change. And so, the spiritual principle of being nice. Okay? And I'm going to go out into the world with this brand new, brilliant idea, and just go be nice to everybody, right? Guess what happens? Hey, sometimes that don't work so good. But I tell you what, it took a lot of practice. It took practice being nice. It took practice showing up. It took practice, and that's all I had on my hands was a whole bunch of time to do it. In the book, it talks about practicing the principles in all your affairs. I don't work a program just when I'm here. I work a program when I'm at work. I work a program when I'm traveling, and I do a lot of it. When I was brand new clean, I told some of my friends I was going to get on my bike and go down to L.A. and do these road trips. And they're like, you'll get loaded. And I'm like, fuck, man, I'll get loaded if I sit here and do what you're doing. Because that ain't me. You know, I'm going to practice principles, stay clean, you know, do recovery, go to meetings. You know, I do a trip like this last one's, you know, 8,000 miles of booting around, and the two most high points of that trip are sitting in Riverside in California going to meetings. And about a week later, after we rode through all the deserts, we cut across the deserts back to the coast. We went to Sacramento, and we went to a bunch of meetings in Sacramento. And met a bunch of people, and they're like doing recovery. I mean, at the end of the month, they have cake night. We went to a meeting. It started at 7, ended at 11:30. And they weren't leaving, you know. And it was like old school NA, you know. You take a key fob, four people get up and present it to you. Your mom's there, you know, stuff like that. You know, and we're just sort of, wow, this is pretty cool. You know, and some of them are going to come up here and do some meetings with us. And you, I wouldn't travel without that part. You know, one time one of my sponsees was down in Austin, Texas, phoned me up, said, you know, can you give me a cake? It's about a 12-year or whatever. I said, okay, and we drive down. And I said, I'm going to make this into a road trip, take a month off work, more suffering. See, there's the suffering part, another month off work, traveling around. I don't know how much I can take, but I'll stick to it, keep you up. And so we get to Austin, Texas, after driving down to Cabo San Lucas and all over the Baja and all over L.A., and we go to Texas, and we go to this little home group, and here's these Americans, and they're having a barbecue, and I give my sponsee a cake, and they almost fight over who's going to take you home, and they want to talk recovery, and they want to know how you're doing it, and they want to know where you're from, and they want to come see you, and you know, they want to know how you do it. And, you know, the more traveling I did, the more I realized how big this program is. It's just not my hometown where I do NA. It's huge. It's going on. And if you take the time as you move along and start to have some adventures like that, it gets interesting. I talk to new guys all the time. They're about, you know, year, 6 months, year clean, got a few bucks. Oh, I'm going to take a holiday. I go, where are you going? And they go, oh, I'm going to go to Thailand. I go, I said, maybe for your first couple vacations, you might consider take a recovery vacation. Go where you can go to a lot of meetings. Go where you can have a lot of support. Go where you can be around some people. And I've heard a few people at first after I've made that brilliant suggestion, sort of like, oh, you just fucked up my vacation. Because they had ideas going on, you know. And sure, okay, they take the suggestion, they come back, and they're talking about these great meetings and these wicked people and this message of recovery and, you know, the same thing. What's going on? What's going on with recovery? And in spite of a lot of things I've done, and I've been clean, this is 21 years now, that's one thing I did right. I just did not get loaded no matter what happened. Good day or a bad day, up or down, I ain't getting loaded. I have absolutely... And if you can do this, you can get 21 years, and that's all I can speak for, is if you can do this, I have convinced myself that if I don't get loaded, whatever's going on is going to be okay. And I tell you, right from my best day, because I've seen more people get loaded succeeding than failing, to my worst day, I'm standing in the hospital and my daughter's OD'd damn near dead, I ain't getting loaded. I ain't going to do that. You know, and in my addiction, you know what? I was a dedicated, motivated addict. I would do anything. And in the course of being in these rooms, I heard about things I never thought of. It's a good thing I didn't think of them because I would have done it. You know, like I know, compulsive, obsessive, and out of control. That never-ending stream of thoughts about self-destruction and using. And I like the literature. I got it running around in my head. It makes sense to me. Little things like, what would your sponsor tell you to do? Or what would your friends tell you to do? Or, you know, like in the Just for Today, I'll have faith in somebody who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Rather than all the crap I got going on in my head. Because I don't know about you, I'm a little lacking in the conscience department. I think I might have barbecued that part of my head. So I have to be careful. And so I got this great idea. I won't do any, and I tell everybody I meet this idea. I won't do anything I can't talk about. I got an even better idea. I won't do anything I can't talk about in this meeting, see, I almost swore, right now. You know how safe that keeps me? Even if it is my ego, I don't know. But I just want to get up here and say, hey, I'm an asshole. You should see what I'm up to. I don't want to do that. So, I got this external conscience going on. I've been in a relationship for 21 years. You know how I stay in a relationship with my old lady? I don't do anything I can't tell her. It's as simple as that. If I can't tell her, because she's got better conscience, common sense than me, I ain't going to do it. Okay? So brilliant idea like that, a brilliant idea like I just don't get loaded, it's going to be okay. If I got problems, I tell people. I get these principles going in my life, these principles of recovery. You know what the biggest principle I ever figured out is, and I want to tell you, and I want you to fucking listen to this, go to meetings. The number one reason anybody I've ever known in all these years ain't that got loaded, here's the reason. I didn't go to meetings. It's the same all the time. So you know what I do? I'm not stupid, man. I go to meetings. I go to meetings till I like them. If I don't like them, I'll change them. I mean, I just get in there and muck with it. Let's get it interesting. Let's get some energy into it. You know, let's get my sponsees doing it. Big things go on in this program. There's little clues. I like to tell new people clues. Go to lots of meetings. And I like to tell people who got a lot of clean time some real big clues, like go to a lot of meetings, you know, and get involved and get to know all the new people. I heard a guy a while ago got some years clean saying, I'm sick of listening to newcomers. And when my dope fiend translator hears that, all I'm hearing is a guy saying, I'm going to get loaded. Because that's where it goes. You know, it's either, I think the big ones are gambling, prostitutes, and painkillers for guys. I don't know for women if it's prostitutes, maybe, but I don't know. But I know for guys it's a big one. Painkillers is another one. Because we're getting old, eh? Me and Barb were sitting up here. I mean, hey, I was saying it in a nice way. We're getting old and I'm liking it. I like this better than being a kid. I wasn't too good at that. I'm pretty good at this. But my feet hurt. Eh? Like, what the hell is that? I mean, would I wear them out or something? Sure shit, when we were new, we walked to a lot of meetings. So we're like the old guys at the meeting now. In my hometown, I don't know, some of you guys come over to New West, go to a meeting. I know we got a bad reputation. We make a lot of noise. Good. We make a lot of noise. But I feel like a senior citizen in those meetings now. You know, got these youngsters, 20 years old, 5 years clean, got it going on. You know the literature, can't tell them nothing. You know, so we're going to start a new meeting in my area. If you're in New West, check this one out. We'll have it going in about a month. It's a specialty meeting, 40 and over. Just so I can relate to somebody once in a while. You know, because things change after you're 40. You know, hey, God love the youngsters and enjoy the whole ride. But man, when you get to 40, it's a little bit different. You still enjoy it, but you got to be more careful because it hurts. I had this crash on a motorcycle a while ago, and when I was a youngster, I did a lot of racing. You know, I'd have a crash, no big deal, get up, dust off, go again. Now I hit the ground, it hurts. I never remembered the ground being that hard, or I wouldn't have done it in the first place, you know? So now I got to be more careful because, and why I said that is because the thing about painkillers, I don't bust myself up, end up in a position where my recovery's compromised. I broke my back, had 17 fractures, and I didn't take no painkillers. I remember a doctor coming in the room and he says to me, "Is it hurt?" I'm like, "I swear to God, it hurt a lot." And he says, "It hurts a lot, eh?" I'm like, "Yeah." He says, "Pray." And he starts walking away. I'm like, "Oh my God, he's going to walk away." He turns around. I'm like, "Oh, okay." Now he's going to say, "Here comes morphine." He says, "Pray hard." So I did. I made a decision. I'm going to get through it, you know, like I just don't want to go back into it for anything. And so, you know, I just believe I can do it. I believe I can stay clean. You know, I believe in Narcotics Anonymous. I mean, I love doing this. Somebody asked me before I got up if I get nervous. I don't get nervous. You know, I don't get nervous at all. I love talking about recovery. I love talking about what's going on. And, you know, when I was a little spud about that tall, I didn't want to be a dope fiend and a criminal, and I want to be a professional hockey player, you know, and I wasn't a stupid kid, and I wasn't the smartest kid, I was just what I was, and, you know, getting loaded changed me into, I don't know, in the course of my life, one day I looked in the mirror, and I wasn't me no more, and I remember those hallmark days of my addiction. I just want to tell you this story for a reason. I had a moment of clarity like this when my daughter was 2 years old. I come out of a blackout and I'm on the floor again, and she's got a cold cloth on my head and she's saying the words, "Daddy's sick again." I mean, it's just like, I never been hit so hard in my life. And for a while, I thought those really heavy moments were my addiction. I thought that's what it was. I thought that's what addiction was, right? And it wasn't. You know what it was? It was every day. It was everything I was missing. It was every feeling, every moment. I got to the point I felt so guilty I didn't even love my own kids. I couldn't feel love. It was dying in me. And my life was falling apart. One day I'm sitting in a park, and here's how the day goes. You'll love this one. I watch somebody drive by in what used to be my truck. Have a drink, get loaded. About 20 minutes later, somebody goes by on what used to be my bike. And I'm in the park. It wasn't what I was looking for in life. And about a half hour later, buddy walks down the street with my wife and kids. I felt like a loser, loser, fucking loser. What else in the world could get you to that? Whatever you love, whatever you care about, whatever means anything to you is just going to get ground into the dirt or taken away. I moved 800 miles away. It's how I ended up here. I just left. I couldn't take it. I'm going to finish myself, you know. And the other day I was telling a friend this little story. Last summer I was cross-country racing with a friend of mine, and his kids are, you know, youngsters, and they're racing, and I went and turned in my tag, and I didn't go in that race, and I told him, I want to follow your kid through this race, make sure he's okay, like we're friends. And he's like, oh, cool, I appreciate that. And so I follow his little kid through this whole race, and it was just like so cool for him, and I'm feeling good. I'm thinking, this is like the best, eh? This is so good. And then we get to the end, and I loop off to the side while he finishes the course, and I stand there and watch his dad watch him go over the finish line. I mean, it's worth $1 million. About 6 years ago, his dad told me he's going to kill himself. He was going to shoot himself in the head. And rather than do that, he reached out and talked to his friends. And one of the things he was saying to himself in his mind was his kids would be better off without him. He's such a fuck up. And to have that moment, only a few years later, to watch him do that is everything. You know, that's recovery. That's what you get when you do this. You know, those kind of moments that really mean something. I was riding with a friend of mine today, and about, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, we're sitting in a restaurant talking, and I asked him a couple of questions. When was the last time you were happy? And when was the last time you were in love? And when was the last time you were having fun? And he told me. And today, I watched him do all of that. I watched him having fun. I watched him, you know, enjoy what he's doing. I watched him be in love. Okay? Just like that. I could see it, you know. And there's the payoff, and it's really quick. And I mean, I tell you, it's 6-8 months ago, that was a man that wanted to die. That's what addiction can do to you. That's what it did to me. You know, that's what we have in common. It doesn't matter what drugs we do, but it takes us to the same place. It gets us there. And I mean, I've met youngsters that are 17 years old, they're smoking enough dope, you know, make themselves damn near retarded, and they get so depressed they want to end it. You know, that's the same as a guy who's, you know, 45 years old and, you know, just can't put it together anymore. And you end up there. And what happens for us, we're lucky enough to end up here. You know, end up coming together and practicing some recovery. And when we practice recovery and we come together and we got this energy about recovery, the sickest twisted fucker can get well around here. You get inspired. You get motivated. You get feeling like you want to be bigger than yourself. You're part of something bigger than what you used to be, something worth doing. And that's what got my attention 21 years ago when I watched those guys practice in recovery. Like, I mean, not just talking shit, doing it, like showing up, like dragging new guys to meetings, like, you know, being there for each other. And there's people in this room, and Barb's one of them. I'd be dead and gone if she wasn't sitting there. I would not have made it. They saved me. They made time for me. They talked to me. You know, they helped me believe in myself when I just didn't have it anymore. And, I mean, it's a debt of gratitude, and it's the same debt, because I talked to Bob the other day, and I said, you know what, since I've been clean, I've given out probably 2,000 basic texts. I love giving them away. I love giving that book away. And he's like, yeah, whatever. I was being all big, and he knew it. And then I knew it. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's cool. Because it's a debt of gratitude. It's each moment is its own. It doesn't add up. You don't stockpile recovery so you can go do stupid shit. You don't stockpile good feelings and happiness. Oh, gee, I took care of my teeth all year. I think I'll snap one off with a pair of pliers. I mean, you know. I got to be careful what goes in there, right? You know, I tell the guys I work with, man, if I say the word cheeseburger out loud, I'm fucking going to get one. I can't stop myself. So I can't be talking shit, talking about addiction or playing that out, because I just I won't be around. So, I talk about recovery. You know, I bring that in. I remember going camping with my friends, and we're out at the fire by the river, and we're pretty new, and they're talking a little shit. Remember when, how fucking cool we were. And I whip out the book. And they're like, oh, fuck, he whipped out the book. And I tell them, you know what, if we don't do this, I'm going to get loaded. I'm going to get the beer. I know me. And so they're like, okay, they accommodate me. And about a half hour later, we're laughing our asses off, having a meeting, talking about recovery. And one of my friends says, man, I'm glad you did that, because I was feeling like using. You know, that's as simple as it is. Are you going to bring recovery to it? And it doesn't take somebody with 20 years to bring recovery to it. Somebody who's brand new can bring recovery to it. Somebody who's got 30 days can go, hey, man, I got 30 days. I got this desperation. I got this desire. And I tell you what, that desire and that desperation inspires me. It makes me want to be here. It makes me want to show up, because I'm not desperate. I don't struggle, but I don't forget. I know what it's like. I remember I'm going to score, and it's like, I feel like I'm demon fucking possessed. Like, you know, stop. You know, the voices, you know, turn, don't go, get out of the car, stop yourself. You know what's going to go bad? I do it anyway. I just can't stop. You know, anybody around you, I mean, people think, what are you, retarded? Why do you got to be like that? Why do you got to do that? I've been hearing that since I was that big. I don't get to hear that around here. Around here, it's a little bit different. Because you know what? I got my external conscience. I don't do shit I can't talk about. I tell people all the time, if you're doing shit you can't talk about, just take a little bit of a moment right now and fucking stop. It's about that tough. Once you've done that, you can turn it all around. It's when we pick up, when we get loaded, you just can't turn it around anymore. You know, another thing I noticed recently is people coming back, and they'll be sitting in these rooms, and I could tell, you know, there's a lot of people in here. You're all connected, you know each other, feel a part of. Sometimes there's somebody in here, they don't feel that, especially if they had clean time before. They don't feel a part of. They'll sit in a room so unplugged, they won't even know why they want to be here. Because at that moment, all they are is what they used to be. That's a tough spot to be in. And if there's anything you can do or say to help somebody who's coming back feel comfortable in this room, you might just save their life. You know, and after they're feeling a part of again, then they can work out whatever they screwed up or whatever they did. But they got to feel a part of first. You know, and that in our literature it talks about, you can come and go free. This ain't no jail. This ain't forced upon anybody. This is just an offer. And lately I've been telling a few people I know that got loaded, there's a little secret to it, and here's what it is. If you're coming back, you need new people in your life. Maybe some of your friends might need to leave you alone for a little while. You know, maybe they need to steer you toward their sponsees. And so we've seen it with a few of our friends who were over 10 years clean who got loaded, and a few of them are telling me that 9 months later they feel better than they did in 9 years. That it feels so good. They feel a part of again. They feel their higher power again. They feel the unity. They feel what's going on here. And it's just a different kind of addiction. And some of them, as they get a little more time, are going to be up here sharing. And that's the message they're going to be giving you. And you really need to hear it. You know, that it gets bad. It gets bad out there. You know, when I sit up here and talk, there's a few people in this room I know. I just feel gratitude. You know, probably, I don't know, 10 years or so ago, me and Cal got in a float plane. I got a pilot's license. And we flew into Bidwell Harbor, landed on the ocean, flew up onto the beach and sat there and did a step 1, 2, 3 and talked about recovery. And, you know, you have these moments with people. I never forget that. That's recovery. You know, and at that point, Cal was the new guy, and I was the guy with a little bit of clean time, and I wasn't like blowing air out my ass. I was talking recovery. I was like really passionate about staying clean. You know, I mean, I know that I was talking to Val tonight. There's a difference between passion and obsession. Tell you what, if I can have anything I want, I can do anything I want. But a lot of times I'll feel obsession, like if I want to buy something or do something, if I feel obsession, I won't do it because it wrecks it. Obsession ruins everything in my life. I've been alive long enough to learn it. I'll get it, but I want to set it on fire. I won't appreciate it, you know. So I do it with passion. And the difference between passion and obsession is The madness isn't there. I won't compromise. I don't have to cheat, steal, and lie to pull off what I'm going to do. I can do it straight up. I can be patient. You know, so practicing those principles in my life allows me the opportunity and the freedom to do that. And, you know, I kind of like living like that. It's a good deal, you know. And after you've been clean a little while around here, whether you like it or not, you're an example of recovery. You're an example of recovery in a lot of ways. And what I've noticed is we've had a few conventions and meetings lately where a lot of people that got a lot of clean time show up. You know what? It brings a lot of energy to that room. And sometimes we're not even sharing. We're just there. And it brings stability to the meetings. That's why the people with time got to be around, because newcomers are crazy. I know that. I was, you know, like just card carrying 1 inch from nuts, right? If you told most people what was going on in your mind, they might lock you up. You ever feel like that? I can't, you know. So I would just be careful and talk a little program till I learned the language. About maybe 15 years ago, they started seriously talking about NA language and the clarity statement and why we have to have, you know, clear language to create unity and bring us together. And if you think about in the first tradition, it talks about my personal recovery depends on NA unity. And I've learned in time that, you know, the steps will help me keep me clean, but the traditionals will keep me here. And if I don't understand what that unity's all about between gossip and bullshit and drama and opinions and attitudes and everything else, I won't be able to sit in this room. I'll find a reason to not be here. I might hate one or two people, quit my home group. I mean, there's always enough going on to get you out of here, that's for sure. I mean, it's just as simple as that. Without that little clue about unity, I guarantee you're going to get loaded. It's just as simple as that. If you take it for granted, you think it ain't coming back like it went away, it doesn't go away. It doesn't end and it doesn't stop. I had a friend who was 12 years clean get loaded about a year ago. I never saw him for 6 months. I went downtown. He looked like Gollum out of the Lord of the fucking Rings. There's just absolutely nothing left. He looked like he'd been using for 12 years. He was one of those guys I was talking about. Now he's sitting in the meetings. He got about 6 months clean, head up, lights on, and feels a part of. And it took a lot of people to pull that off. He got saved. And I feel like I got saved. So when I get asked to do this, I'll take the opportunity. Talk a little bit about recovery. Talk a little bit about that history. Talk a little bit about myself. Throw myself out there. You know, take that risk, right? Maybe even be vulnerable a little bit, you know? Whatever it takes, you know? So I feel a lot of gratitude, you know, and it's kind of weird to tell people that something, a lot of it ain't have nothing to do with me. It has to do with my friends that are sitting in this room. It has to do with the friends I met on the last road trip I did. It has to do with the last speaker I listened to. We just went out to Edmonton, did a convention, and I mean, it's one of those things. I've been clean a little while, so of course, you know, I'm like the old dog now, and every once in a while we travel back to Alberta and do these speaker meetings. And you know what? There was so much clean time there, it was incredible. And there's so much unity there, it was the same thing. People were just like, you know, reaching out to the new people, and they had a really good convention, and, you know, it's doing exactly what you guys are doing here. And, you know, I got all inspired. I met a guy at the meeting, said he had some I'm always trying to scrounge up speaker tapes, because I like to give them to new guys, you know. Put that in the car when you're driving somewhere. And it gets in your head, and I needed it to get in my head. I needed something in my head besides get loaded, you know, or fuck you was big. Round and around and around. Hey, I could add that to anything. So I had to add something else, and I'd listen to speaker tapes, and I'd go to meetings and listen to people, and I'd be thinking about what they said. And they'd be talking about turn it over, let it go. You know, they'd be talking about this just for today, you know, thinking about recovery. They have a program, follow it to the best of your ability. And they weren't just talking about it, they were doing it. They were those examples. And that's how I learn, you know. I translate it into dope fiend language, and then it gets in my head and it makes all kinds of sense. And I heard what that guy was saying when I was new. If you go to meetings, you're going to stay clean. If you want to be happy, do the steps. If you want to enjoy being here, learn the traditions. You know, and if you got gratitude, you'll do service. And if you really want to, you know, get into it, do it all. Do it all at once. You know, sort of become a good example in the deal. And, you know, I thought, okay, I'll give it a try, you know. Only thing I ever been told is big as, you know, once in a while I get told to shut up because I talk too much. But I love talking about recovery. The other night I was in a meeting, one of my daughters took a 9-year cake. I was just sitting in the meeting looking at her, and I just love her, you know, and I felt so proud. And swear to God, I've had some of the worst moments of my life with that kid, and since she's been doing recovery, the best. You know, and we've done bike rides and trips, and, you know, it feels like we have a family. And about a week before that, my youngest daughter took a 6-year cake. 6-year cake. And you know what she did? She recommitted to recovery. And she was one of those youngsters that came around here when she was new, and somebody abused her being new. And you can put down the dope and use people, and you're going to hurt people. And she went back out for a couple of years. And there's this 50-year-old guy hitting on my 15-year-old daughter. Took everything in my life, everything in my heart and soul not to kill that man. And I didn't. I prayed for him. I let it go. I prayed for my daughter. I had faith. It's not the program. It's a clown. I just left it. And you know what? When she came back to the program, and there was all these young people around, reached out, helped her, she got into it. You know, got saved, just like me. I couldn't do nothing. And you know, for a few years, she drifted away. You know, she's still clean, going to school. That's another big one gets young people. They're too busy going to school to go to fucking meetings. So she's all busy. And she recommitted to the program and got a sponsee and seems happier than she ever been before. And says to me, you know what, I never made a decision to be here and do this and stay here till right now. It took 6 years for her to surrender and make the decision to do recovery. And in the course of that 6 years, if somebody had been using her, treating her like shit, she wouldn't have done it. If there had been a bunch of rules imposing what you got to do around here, she wouldn't have done it. Nobody's going to make you do anything. You know, we'll hope you stay clean. We'll hope you want a good life out of the deal. We might try to inspire you a time or two along the way. You know, if you can't relate to me, you might be able to relate to somebody else. If you want the bullshit in your life to stop, it's a surefire way. It worked for me because I tell you, don't stay clean this long, luck. I just ain't that lucky, or I'd go buy a fucking lottery ticket right now. So now I'm all puffed up and proud and feeling good. My kids are clean. You know, like, feeling a lot of love in my life. You know, really caring about my friends. Having a lot of gratitude. And you know what? I go to meetings and talk about it. I go to meetings and talk about succeeding and staying clean. You know, I go to meetings and talk about the trips I have and the adventures I have and the things I do. You know, I was on a starting line with 200 bikes in a race last year, and I tell you, when they fire them all up at once, kind of a rush. And then the 200 bikes start on a line about as wide as this room, go about 100 yards that way, go around a tree on a trail about that wide. I ran over about 3 guys on the way to that tree. Felt kind of bad for them, but I ain't going to stop me. You know what I mean? Got around the tree. I mean, it's so dusty you can't even see where you're going. You just go wide open and hope you don't hit something. If you've never done it, you should give it a try. It's a lot of fun. That's kind of how I felt like when I was brand new clean. I started out with a lot of people, and a lot of them ain't here. You know, and I went through a lot of painful experiences, and no matter what happened, I didn't give up. You know, I've had friends try to drag me down, rip me off, fuck me over, treat me like shit. I've been through as much crap clean as loaded. And you know what? I ain't get loaded over it. I ain't going to fold, sell out, give up. I've made the investment in it, so I'm going all the way. And a lot of my friends are back now, and we have relationships again. As they were going down with their dope-grown bullshit ideas and their greedy ideas and their selfish ideas, you know, they're back now and ain't got shit, and they've been lumped out, and their lives suck, and they're like, I need some help. I got all the proof I need, you know. I remember when I was new, I wanted to sell dope. And I go to meetings and all these guys are there and I go, I was thinking I could sell some dope and stay clean. Long as this isn't my drug of choice. What do you think? So they all laughed at me. They didn't tell me don't do it. But a few of them told me they tried it. And they told me how bad it went for them. You know, and the sacrifice they made. And I made a decision, okay, I'll give it some time. Think it over, ain't going to do it, see what happens. Turn it over, have some faith, you know what I mean? Back in the 80s, you couldn't get a job if your life depended on it. It was pretty fucking grim. Maybe it was the disco clothes or something, I don't know. It was tough, eh? So, of course, being a criminal and all, it was pretty tempting, you know? One day, buddy's on a 10-speed, and the next day, he's in a $40,000 truck with all the gold and all the bullshit and all the bling, bling bullshit going on. And I'm standing there with my bus pass. Go ahead, try be fucking cool, get a date when you got a bus pass. You know? I'm going to get you on the bus, baby. You know what I liked about my old lady? She liked me. You know, didn't want to change me. What I liked about her when I met her, she intimidated me a bit. She's pretty smart. Too smart. She's dead serious about recovery. And when I listened to her share in meetings, she was just done. That was our first attraction. We went out for 6 months, never got sexually intimate. We were emotionally intimate. It made all the difference in the world. Got to know each other. I was just tired of all the old bullshit and tired of what I was doing, and I wanted to do it different. I wasn't one of those people who got to see his kids right away. I never got to see my kids for 4 years. You know, because I hear a lot of people, they're struggling with that one. You lose your kids, you know, it's kind of tough. I just decided I'd turn it over to God. I mean, I actually went all the way with it. I thought, if I don't get to see them till they're teenagers, I'll live with it. I will stay clean, and when they find me, I'm not going to be some loser in a ditch. I'm not going to be some, you know, down and out fuck. I'll have my life together. And I just prayed and had faith, and it took my friends to get me through it because I couldn't get through it on my own, and it worked out. I stayed clean, you know, and I try not to give the impression, like here's why I'll tell you this. When new people come in, sometimes if you got a year or two or more, people compare themselves to you. Tell them the truth about early recovery. Don't bullshit them, because then they'll draw a fair comparison. If you want to compare yourself to me, I'll tell you what I was like first year clean. I won't, you know, don't compare yourself to who I am now. I can figure out things in about 1 second that would take you a month, and it's not because I'm smarter than you. It's just I've had so much practice with recovery. That's how it works. When I was 1 year clean, I tell people this, when I was 2 years clean, I could barely wipe my ass without poking my fingers through the paper. So go ahead, compare yourself to that. It'd be the end of the month, we ain't got no groceries. I'm 2 years clean and it's groceries or gas in that truck. There goes the truck. I remember going to a meeting, I got fired from a job. I go to the meeting and I'm all upset and I go, my name's Dave, I'm an addict and I'm feeling kind of bummed. I got fired from my job today. And they're like, yeah, they're clapping and cheering. They're like, get another job. I never thought about that. I was so busy being fucked up. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll go get another job. I had another job the next day. I mean, you know, somebody in the meeting says, I want a job. A couple of years later, I'm the guy in the meeting and buddy's over there. Oh, I'm sick of being on welfare. I got no money and life sucks. I need a job. So I go up to him and go, I'll give you a job. Oh, how about next week? I'm like, okay. So I hunt him down a week later. You're going to work, fucker. And then I get these addicts on this job site because I got a couple of work skills. I was a working addict. And I tell them, hey, you guys get this work done by noon, I'll pay you the whole day. You should see those guys work. Some of the guys who know me know these stories, but there's two crews of guys across the street. There's another crew doing the same thing. They're throwing the tools in the ditch and sneaking off. My guys are working. And I was thinking, man, if you did recovery like that, eh? Like actually read the book, do the steps, get involved, get an opinion, you're going to be okay. If you did recovery like you did your addiction, some of you guys with 30 days would be my fucking sponsor. I put a lot of energy into being an addict. Like, I give it anything. You know, let's go. So then I'm going to do recovery like some limp dick low volt? Like, no way, man. I'm going to get into it. Put some energy. So I did. It made all the difference in the world, eh? You know? And then you hear, you know, some people do the suffering technique. God love them. It ain't fucking me. I figure there's three crews in the room, usually. There's the people that talk about shit, don't do nothing. There's the people that fucking think about shit, barely talk about it and still don't do nothing. And then there's the other crew. They're thinking about it, talking about it, and doing it. And in the literature, it says stick with the winners. It doesn't point out in the next 21 pages all the losers. And it doesn't go on to describe anybody in this fellowship as a loser. As a matter of fact, in our fellowship, there are no unfortunates and there are no losers. The reality of it is, it just says stick with the people that are doing it, and that's the attraction of this fellowship. I've seen a lot of people fart around for a farewell with this program, and then one day they bounce up to you and go, man, this is great. And you go, what? Well, I'm finally doing it. And the guy's been around the room 10 years, never done the steps. There's a big clue. What did you miss? You must have got dropped on your head when you were little or something. Come on. You know, and then there's Buddy over here, 30 days clean, on a step four, feeling good at meetings, sharing all the time, unstoppable. People are telling him, slow down or you're going to get loaded. No, no, no. Tell them to catch up. Eh? Just like that. Put some energy into it. So I decided I'd put some energy into it, put some energy into recovery, put some energy into my life. You know, and I mean, it's a good deal. It's a good deal. I don't have a doubt in the world. You know, and I meet people that got a year clean, 6 months clean. They're saying, I got no doubts. I'm not living in fear. You know, I was fueled by fear. I grew up terrorized when I was a child, and I had a lot of fear. I was afraid of everything. And I used to think I had an anger problem. The truth is, I didn't have an anger problem. I had a fear problem. And in the course of doing recovery, people caring about me, I ain't afraid of anything. I don't live in doubt and worry. I mean, I could worry so hard when I was new, four people beside me get stressed out, want to kill themselves. That's some worrying, eh? You know, just, I'm there, man. I'm consumed by the shit, and I just ain't there. You know, I had some shit happen today that was a big deal. I don't care. Whatever. Next. Get in line. I mean, there's too many good things going on. And what I noticed in the course of living my life clean is when I paid too much attention to the bullshit, I forgot about all the good shit. If I didn't have people in my life, I wouldn't have had that moment I had today with my friend, because that was a big deal for me. It was a big deal for me to see him and his wife, you know, see them together, see them be in love, see them on this adventure. You know, I need to see that. And if I'm not here, I wouldn't see it, you know. So I show up. Simple stuff. I read that book. I go to meetings. I make a point. I do something for somebody every day. If you really want this recovery to work out good and you kind of want to get into the bonus round, 25% more and all that shit, if I was selling you something, I'd tell you how to do this. Do something for somebody every day. Do something for somebody and don't even tell them about it. Do something for anybody. But do something. Okay? Take some positive action and read that book and learn how to practice the principles. And it'll change you. It'll change your perspective, you know. Get a new perspective on your life. My old perspective had to go, you know what I mean? Like, it's fucking me up. Here, give you a new perspective. When in doubt, knock them out. Now, how far are you going to go with that? You know, somebody's going to kick your ass, and it's going to be bad. And here's the new perspectives. This was so hard to let it go. Some genius in this program thought of that one, eh? You know how hard that is? Let it go. I used to hear women would talk about there's claw marks in it. I ain't letting it go, you know? And let it go. How the fuck do you do that? Well, you get something new going on. How do you let your addiction go? How do you get rid of it? How do you get it out of your life? You get some recovery going on. And you get good at recovery and you practice it, you know, like some good kung fu moves, right? So in all the years I've been clean, I've met lots of people have been around in and out, in and out, in and out. What do they all have in common is they just don't get good at it. I get good at recovery. This isn't a hobby for me. Okay? Every hobby I ever had, I change. I put it on the shelf. It collects dust. I just sold a bike last week that sat in my garage for over a year. Never rode it once. You know, I stopped doing that. This isn't a hobby. And if you do it like a hobby, something off the side, and you put other shit ahead of this, it won't work. I swear to God, I wish it was some other way, but it ain't. If you gotta put this first if you want it to work. And go figure, I put it first, got a great job, good family, great relationship, lots of freedom. I got so much shit, I need a bigger place to pile it up. You know what I mean? Like, I got everything I want. If you'd have told me that's how it was going to go when I was new, I might not have believed you. Okay? I might have settled up short. I might have, you know, just wanted the pain to stop. I might just wanted to. I felt so much fear, it was crippling me. I felt so much anger, I was destroying my life. I might have sold up short. So you start dreaming. And it's a big deal in recovery. I don't know about you, when I went to sleep when I was new, I woke up, I was having nightmares every day. I just couldn't shake it. I mean, so many bad things happened, it was consuming me. And when, in the course of doing recovery and being around people that love me and care about me, I started having dreams. I mean, you ask my wife, I'd wake up screaming and swinging. She'd throw things across the room to wake me up. I mean, I was freaked out and fucked up. I sleep good. I dream good dreams. And all of a sudden, if I describe my life, it'd be like describing a dream, you know. I'm on these sand dunes down the bottom of Mexico at the absolute end of the world, and the sun's setting, and me and Lou are there, and I'm having one of those romantic type moments. And I'm thinking, couldn't be better. A year later, I'm riding through the lower deserts in Washington, and me and my buddy Don, and it's his birthday, and we just went cross country over these mountains, and I had one of those moments. It couldn't be better, you know. And I've been having a lot of those lately. And if I describe my recovery to anybody that's new, I'd have to tell you like the whole story that goes with that. You know, that it's a story about recovery. You know, that it's about, you know, being in love. It's about really good friends. When you see them, it just fills you right in. That you feel complete. The time, I have a sponsee I haven't seen for years. You know, he lives thousands of miles away. And it's just like, you know, what we have in common is recovery. And in the beginning, what we have in common is our addiction and our bullshit and our attitudes and our crap. And if it stayed that way, we're in trouble. And it, in the course of recovery happening in our lives, it's a responsibility to not do it like some sideline shit, to get right in there and get it up front. And all of a sudden, the energy in this room is about recovery, you know, and everybody's got a little piece. You know, everybody's got their own thing going and their own ideas about it. And if we all bring it in, eh? If we all bring a little bit of that energy, a little bit of compassion, like at some of the bigger conventions, sometimes they'll do a countdown and they'll get down to the newest guy and they'll get the newest guy up and they'll give us a book and I'm looking over, a buddy beside me is 30 years clean, tears running down his face. What the hell is that? Right? The only thing could explain that is compassion. Like one, he remembers what that feels like. And the other one is so much fucking gratitude for where you're standing. That you're standing in, you know, feeling recovery and alive, and we survived this. Not a bunch of fucking victims around here. We're the survivors, right? Like, that's how I feel, you know, that I lived a whole other life, that this is a completely different life. I did not bring my addiction into this life. I'm not sitting in casinos and bars and hanging out with people that are fucking using. I don't do that. I can't do it. Personally, I think if you can sit in a bar and not get loaded, you ain't a fucking addict like me. Like, I'll get drunk and smash a beer into your face. Woohoo! How's that for a fucking Miller commercial? I see those commercials. How come it wasn't like that when I was doing it, you know? Like, I feel ripped off. So I know the truth, the absolute truth about addiction. I understand it. I don't have a doubt in my mind how powerful it is. It's killed bigger, stronger fuckers than me. It's done things to my friends that makes me want to work harder at recovery, to be there more, to give back more. You know, when I saw my friend downtown, and after he was 12 years clean, he was a good man and gave back a lot. He just got greedy and got off the rails. My wife was crying. I had so many strong feelings in my stomach, I wanted to barf. It was like, you know, saying goodbye like he was going to die. And all I told him was, hey, your friends miss you and we really love you and I got to go. I'm not going to hang out. I'm not going to play that shit. And he called, you know, he called. And there was a whole bunch of people in line. Hey, Val, a whole bunch of people in line ready to do whatever it took to help him. You know, I phoned him, talked to him today for a little bit and asked him how he's doing and he's happy in recovery. And I asked him the same question. When was the last time you were happy? And he said, I was just walking around town with my old lady, feeling completely free, being in love. And the other night, me and Lou were at the coffee shop and I saw him walking in the park with his wife. I mean, it's a big deal. You know, 6 months ago, he was dying. He was giving her up. It's too late. I used to be clean. I can't get it back. He'd sit in meetings, not a part of. 6 months, it's all it took, you know. And it's that energy and that recovery and that gift that people had time for him. Now he's going to, you know, pass it on. You know, anybody in here can do it. Anybody. You can save somebody. You can make time for somebody. You can practice the magic, you know. You can practice recovery. When I was a little kid, I got this magic set, and I used to get grounded a lot. I was a bad kid. And I got this magic set from some relative, whatever, you know, you pull it out, you look at it, you mess with it a little bit, it's crap, throw it away, because it didn't work like that, didn't work instant. And of course I got, you know, locked down again, and I pulled out that magic kit, and I started reading the instructions and practicing the tricks, and, you know, when I got out on good behavior... I was around my friends and I knew all these magic tricks. And I was really good at it. And I could amaze my friends. And I got the girl because of it, you know, shit like that. And I just put some effort into it. And I think recovery is kind of the same thing. Like, I had been around recovery, and I did go to treatment, and I was in recovery house, and I got nothing. I wouldn't practice it. I just thought I would sit there and somehow it would happen for me, and it wasn't. And it was just like, you know, just like it was when I was a kid. I read that book. I read it with my heart. I just soaked it up. I learned the language. And the people around me were my inspiration. And, you know, and I got good at it. And I mean, I tell anybody who's struggling or having a hard time, you know what? You ain't fucking doing it right. I don't struggle. I ain't having a hard time. You know, my dad died about maybe 6 months ago. My mom phones, says, hey, your dad just died. I'm like, thank God, you know, because he was having a hard time. I'm not falling apart and fucked up about it. I'm grateful. You know, before he died, he was 88 years old, and he's telling me shit like, you got it figured. You enjoy your life, eh? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, good. It's the only advice I want to give you. Enjoy your life. You know, enjoy what you're doing, eh? I mean, it was a big deal, you know, that I wanted to practice it and get good at it. So if you're struggling, I'm not saying you're a fucking idiot. I'm saying practice. Practice some of the magic. Practice some of the recovery. Get some people involved in your life. Take a couple of suggestions. Stop whatever's fucking you up. You know, I talked to a guy last week. He's, oh my God, I'm all fucked up. I want to shoot myself. I got the guns out of the house, he says. I'm like, where do you got them now? He's feeling so bad he's going to shoot himself. But never once for one moment did it cross his mind to stop doing all the crap that was making him crazy. You know, he's got a wife and two kids, and he's getting a prostitute every weekend. He has no intimacy in his life. He's living in fear and doubt and insanity. He's indulging in addiction, and he hasn't picked up, and he's going to get loaded. And it was one of those guys that reached out before he finished the job. Is it too late? No. But it's a pretty good suggestion not to do the things that screw you up. How many times you gonna make the same stupid mistakes before you figure it out? You know? So it came down to the same suggestions that I give anybody new. You know, go to meetings, share your feelings, watch what you talk about, don't commit social suicide. Some things are for your sponsor. It used to be pretty grim around here in the old days. We used to call them dump meetings. I don't know if you guys still do it. We don't much anymore, but you'd go and just barf your guts out on the table. Whatever pain, whatever misery. We had dump meetings and razor blade meetings, eh? And in the razor blade meetings, that's one where you want to just go around and pass them out. And geez, you know, it's so grim, you should finish yourself off for sure, right? And I don't know how we dawned on the idea that we had to stop doing that, you know, because we were sharing, eh? Oh, we were sharing. Oh, the pain, you know. Be like, if I was bored, I'd pick up the phone, call my ex-wife, then I'd be suicidal. I had something to talk about, right? So I'd go to the meeting. Ah, you know. It's just so much better to get some inspiration, let me tell you. So the program grew. There's more recovery going on. There's more women, that's good too. There's more young people. There's more of everything. There's more of what we thought it could be 20 years ago. Okay? Because it was small. 20 years ago, I knew every person in the program, intimately. Everyone. They were at every meeting. And they knew everything about you. I mean, everything. There's just no secrets. That's why I was a little bit worried when Barb said she was going to introduce me. Because I won't say I'd done some perfect kind of program, you know, fucking the Lord came down and blessed me and I've been like the Buddha or something. I've probably done everything stupid that can be humanly done around here. And I stopped because I knew, man. I got it so bad. I'm in a camp job in the middle of nowhere. I'm isolated and alone, you know, got to make a living, whatever. That's what I do. I build roads or whatever at that time. And I decide I'm going to get loaded. And I'm in this camp, and everybody's drinking and loaded, and you know I'm in the shitter, and I crack a beer. Up she goes, poured her in. I'm in front of a mirror, and I spit it out and smash the beer into the mirror. It was just like, fuck. How the fuck did I get here? You know, I got isolated, got alone, didn't take care of my business. My sponsor said, don't go do those camp jobs. So I did what, you know, I learned how to do. I fucking quit that job, stole everything in sight, and went home. Truth. It was something I worked on later in my program. Like I said, I'm not saying I was a saint, but I have got a new idea along the way that I don't want to learn the hard way anymore. Eh? There's another brilliant idea. I don't know where I figured that out. I want to learn the easy way, and I started applying the principles to more areas of my life. My job was one, and my traveling's another, and I mean, it changed things. It just changed things. So I don't have those close calls. When I did that, I was probably about 3 years clean. And I was one of those guys, I don't know, about 14 months clean, ready to put the rope over the rafters. And my wife suggested that I do a step four. And if that didn't work, kill yourself. So I did the steps. Pen and fist. I just did it. I didn't know if it would work. And I mean, that's kind of one of the things I'm trying to tell you, is that half the time I didn't know if it would work. I didn't know if it would make it better. I didn't know if it would change it, but I did it. You know, I just did it. I had some faith that it would be okay. And a lot of times it was just people flat out told me what to do. I remember when I used to have those phone fights with my ex-wife. You know the ones where when you're done, you take the phone and you smash it into everything in sight? There's my 5-minute card. Somebody had to teach me this. Hang up the phone, you know. So then it goes back to the principles again, because that ain't enough, right? Because I'm just going to do it again. How about be nice? How about, you know, stop fighting? How about stop arguing? How about be a different kind of person? In the course of my recovery, I really, really, really did not want to be who I was. And that's what I started telling you tonight, you know. I wanted to be someone else, somewhere else, doing something else. I sure did not want to be me. In the course of my recovery, I tell you right now, without a doubt in my mind, I don't want to be anyone else, anywhere else, doing anything else. And that's the kind of freedom I got out of this program. That's the kind of freedom that came with doing the steps and making the changes. That my life isn't based in addiction, it's based in recovery. So a lot of the earlier mistakes I made and the lumps I took along the way, I just don't do that anymore. And I do boil it down to the simplicity of don't do anything you can't tell the guy beside you. If you're in a relationship, don't do anything you can't tell your wife. I mean, it's an external conscience. It's probably bigger than yours, you know. There's some simplicity to it. And I read the book and I practice the principles, you know. And when I get asked to participate and share a little bit in recovery, you know, I show up. When Cal phoned me about coming over here and Marie phoned me, it was like, you know, one, I want to come see the old dog. I mean, look at the head on him, for Christ's sake, eh? You know, we got history. We're like fucking kids together. You know, now we're like, you know, we're here. We survived. We're here all these years later. So living it and loving it. I like living this program, and I love life, and I love what's going on, and I love my friends. And I'm really grateful I got to come and share with you. So have a good convention. Thanks.